Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined by Marissa Simmons and Tierra Burge. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing great so far.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, it's like 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's early for me.
Midday for me.
Yeah. great. So we were actually just talking, we have you guys on to talk about Iolanthe. And we were actually just talking about pronunciation because I came out as a Long Islander.
Gums a-blazing.
Just like, Iolanthe.
I didn't want to have.
Like, no.
I didn't want to have the awkward moment on the podcast to be like, actually.
Yeah. Well, no,
you're
but it's.
Saying it wrong?
It's interesting. I think one of the first things, and this is silly, but like one of the first things I think about anytime I've seen anyone post about it is like, how is that word pronounced? Because like, it is a that word. It's Iolanthe.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it kind of like on Facebook and stuff
it's,
like that.
It's one of the characters' names. Marissa actually plays Iolanthe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So she is the expert.
We're in the presence of a celebrity.
Oh, my God.
We're kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And, thank you so much, Marissa, for coming on.
Sure.
Hinted that we were going to have Aaron Hunt on, but he is currently temping, which, like, story of our podcast, that, like, making it work however you can. And so I messaged you in a panic yesterday, and I was like, would you come on the show? And you were like, absolutely. And it was really, really cool of you, so thank you for that.
Surely.
Yeah. And also, you're the lead of the show, which is really awesome. The title character, as it were.
Yeah, the titular character.
Yeah.
Just glad I got to say titular.
Nailed it.
And I just want to also point out that Aaron was going to try really hard to come on today, and the excuse he was going to give to his temp agency was that he was too gay to come into work.
Yeah. Which I was like, I want to see how that to be a fly on the wall.
If anyone so though could sorry. Convince you that that was a legitimate excuse for him to not come into work, it's Aaron.
Yeah,
like, that's fair.
I think he could really
I'm
pull that
sorry,
off.
I'm sorry, I'm just too gay to come in.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk a little bit about Iolanthe. What do you think people need to know about the plot before they come in? Or like, what's the thing you've been telling people about the show?
They'll reel them in.
For me, I think one of the things that I've had to work on the most in terms of this character, she doesn't make a ton of appearances mm-hmm. in the operetta. And so I'd been struggling with, why is this show named after Iolanthe?
Interesting.
And what I have gathered after really studying the character is that she is the type of person that will put anybody's happiness before herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just, she values love so much over anything else that she is willing to sacrifice anything for other people, and in this case her son, which who no one knows she has. And I think that's kind of it's a huge topic even today in our social justice and political climate, putting love above hate, and she's exactly that type of character. So while she isn't on stage super frequently,
mm-hmm.
Every time she is on stage, she's trying to do something for somebody else.
Like making a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sometimes the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah.
No, this show, that's definitely like a good thing to bring up. And it's fun to like, you know, mention it on social media and stuff because it really is so applicable to kind of today's climate, but like in a silly fun way, because it's kind mm-hmm. of like, what happens when you take someone who is completely unqualified and you put him in a position of power mm-hmm. where no one can or will say no to him? And there's also fairies, so
can't go wrong with that,
right?
Mm-hmm. Well, so Gilbert and Sullivan is interesting because I feel like there's a lot of cases for there being a lot of character balance. And I mean that in the sense of, like, there usually isn't a character that's, like, the entire show,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, a lot of times, you have distinct, like, really each character ends up having kind of, like, two or three scenes roughly in each act. And it really kind of balances out that way. And what it really lends itself to is a lot of, like, ensemble work. Is that true also for Iolanthe?
Definitely, yeah.
There's a lot of ensemble singing, cool. for sure.
This show is kind of known for its men's ensemble.
Yeah.
Who, the men, and it's this show is actually really, really interesting in the Gilbert and Sullivan canon, in that the ensemble is really split into, like, two separate worlds. Mm-hmm. So there's the men's ensemble, which is the House of Peers, the members of Parliament, and then there's the women's ensemble, which is the fairies.
Yeah.
So one, you know, lives in fairyland, the other one lives in Victorian era, modern times.
Yeah.
It's known for its really impressive men's ensemble. They sing this number called the March of the Peers. I don't have to sing it because it is a beast, but really they do really, really well. But yeah, then the rest of us who are the principals, like, I mean, my character, Phyllis, who's, you know, a shepherdess and is in love with Iolanthe's son, mm-hmm. Strephon.
Is that Matt's character?
That's Matt Peckham's character. Got Phyllis is on stage so much.
She is.
But a lot of it is really just being kind of plugged into the men's ensemble, because mm-hmm. the entire men's ensemble is in love with Phyllis, with the character, and she mm-hmm. doesn't care.
Right. When a principal character is singing a quote-unquote solo, it's always sort of incorporated into an ensemble, except mm-hmm. for Iolanthe's final aria. But everything mm-hmm. else really incorporates the men's chorus or mm-hmm. the fairies.
The Lord Chancellor has a couple, like, just solo moments, but yeah, mm-hmm. everything is, like, it involves everybody, all the characters.
Right.
The
whole,
mm-hmm. So I think you guys both come from, like, the opera world, right? I don't know mm-hmm. a ton about your, how am I trying to ask this? You went to school for opera, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
I did my undergrad at the Frost School of Music.
Cool.
In Miami, and my grad work at the San Francisco Conservatory.
Miami School. I went to University of Central Florida.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Cool. And the reason why I was leading into that, not to be like, where'd you go to school? But like, I think it's interesting, although operetta isn't that different from opera, there is definitely like a step to the right, if you were, not to the right politically, but like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, it's like a jig to the left and a step to the right.
Like, I spent my morning, like, Googling, like, operetta versus opera. Because, of course, mm-hmm. like, going to school, we learn what it is. But, like, mm-hmm. when you're trying to explain it to someone else, their eyes just kind of glaze over a little bit.
You try to explain it to someone that doesn't know the difference between, like, a musical and opera.
Mm-hmm. It's a very challenging conversation. Yep.
It's not really a musical.
Yeah.
It's not an opera.
It's opera light, but definitely not a musical.
Yeah.
I usually try to explain it as the singing sounds very operatic, but the dialogue is still spoken.
Mm-hmm.
But affected, usually. The dialogue is affected.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I think also sets it apart from musical theater, because you kind of, I don't know, I feel like with, and tell me, like, if I'm being, like, an asshole, tell me. I feel like with operetta, there's kind of, like, a veneer over it. Like, there's mm-hmm. a lot of work put into it to be, like, polished. Mm-hmm. Where, like, the dialogue is affected. I know, like, sometimes the more, like, character singers will have to sing in a certain dialect.
Mm.
And it's usually, like, and it's a English, like, a British tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've all had our British accents beat into us by Aaron.
Yes.
He's a very mean man.
Does he do that? Does he have a good one? A good British accent?
He does.
He does.
Yeah. He's really, really good. And he's very particular with us.
He's done a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan. So while the accent is not authentic to any particular one town in mm-hmm. England, it's the accepted accent that goes along with Gilbert and Sullivan to kind of have it uniform across the board.
Yeah.
And he's quite the expert in that. That's Gilbert and Sullivan type of English.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Aaron from his producing. He was kind of working on, at the time, 2 years ago, it was called Chicago Theater Opera, and that was, he was doing, like, English one acts out of that, and that's kind of developed into transgressive theater opera, which I know mm-hmm. you were part of for the Maligned Mezzo. Maligned Mezzo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it's always fun for me to kind of hear about, his, like, directing, there's a better way to put that, I'm sure, but, like, specifically his directing and also his performing, because he also does that. I think he actually just retired from performing, right?
He did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think actually we should back up a little bit.
Sure.
Iolanthe is an operetta that's being produced by the Gilbert and Sullivan Opera Company in Chicago, mm-hmm. which is a company that has been going for 57 years.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been Aaron the entire time.
No.
Okay.
No. And actually, Aaron isn't our director.
Mm-hmm.
Our director is
Shane Valenzi.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. So Aaron Hunt is our associate director.
Okay.
Because Shane Valenzi, who directed Princess Ida last year, I don't know how many shows he's directed before
Definitely
that.
A few.
But he just recently moved to Pittsburgh? He's a lawyer, and his wife moved out there, so he, directed the show, wrote down his notes, and Aaron is kind of deciphering that and giving it to us. So Aaron, it's interesting to work with Aaron as a director, but it's also, he's kind of bringing to life another director's vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then Matthew Shepard is our music director. So
gotcha.
Now
so
our listeners at home have the whole story of what the hell we're talking about
and
who we're talking about.
We also do a thing at the end of every episode where we let the guests get a minute
hard
plug. Yeah, to kind of talk about the event and give all the details too, so no giant pressure there either. And I'm also sorry about the heater. I can hear it now, and I'm gonna be neurotic about audio for a second because that's my shtick now, I guess. If you have a sensitive ear and can hear the heater, I'm sorry.
We have a noisy
There's
radiator.
I can do.
We have a noisy radiator. It's it just sounds like hissing.
Now that
we've identified it, you'll probably hear it.
Yep.
But so
it's going now.
So
but,
sorry about that. But
yeah, but it's not too bad. But I just wanted to shout that out if there's any other, so I guess the reason why is if there's any other audio issues, please let us know, because I'm always open to kind of feedback and stuff, but that one, nothing I can do.
Yeah.
Great. Cool. That was one thing I wanted to do. So the question I actually wanted to ask about directing is, that's an interesting thing. So it's kind of concept by Shane Valenzi.
Yeah.
And then it's brought to life by Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is that something that you guys have ever done before, that kind of experience, or?
It is a common thing that happens a lot in operas. A lot of times you get a big director that's brought on for a project, and they also have 12 other projects.
Of course, right.
And so you have to, keep the work going and understand what their notes mean in order to rehearse and whatnot, but they can't always be there.
Right.
Sometimes they aren't able to be there until, the week of or tech week or something.
Yeah. Well, I think it's cool, actually, because what it does is it really opens the room for collaboration in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, in order for it to work, you really have to communicate. I'm sure that Aaron and Shane are communicating a ton, and in that way, it really kind of focuses the vision, and there's something to be said about that I think is actually really interesting, and it almost could be more beneficial than the traditional director and assistant director thing, because I think that sometimes you'll see an assistant director kind of take a step back and just kind of be taking more notes,
mm-hmm.
whereas in this case,
the associate's doing a lot of the legwork,
right? Yeah,
which is cool. Yeah, the shows I've done where there's been an associate director, and I've been an associate director before, and it's a lot of note taking and making sure that all the blocking is mm-hmm. written down and
mm-hmm.
yeah.
In a sense, this is a bit Aaron is sort of playing the role of the conductor in a choir that is singing a new composition,
right.
where the composer isn't going to be there until the performance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like a dramaturgical composition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Cool. Yeah, and so it's out down in Hyde Park. And like you said, the Gilbert and Sullivan Society has done a ton of stuff. So what's the dynamic of the Gilbert and Sullivan Society with the school? Because I know that that's kind of a unique...
Yeah, they are in partnership. The Gilbert and Sullivan Company is in partnership with the University of Chicago down in Hyde Park. And I believe the proceeds from the show go to the music department at University of Chicago. So we perform in their space. Our orchestra, I think, is their...
students,
I think. Yeah, they're at the school. Matt Shepard also works at the school with the orchestra, with the singers.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a really awesome collaboration. It's also kind of exciting knowing that, like, you know, the money from the show gets to benefit these students and benefit this school and the program.
Well, the hall is gorgeous. What is that hall called? I'm trying to remember.
Mandel Hall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember that we were, I was talking to someone, I think Erin Mall was helping out at some point with the Great God Pan project. And she was talking about...
With Ross Crean.
Right. Yeah. With trying to set up getting Mandel Hall as a space. And it's interesting because what I remember from it, and I'm sure that this is how it worked with either the orchestra or like some Gilbert and Sullivan club at the school, is that you have to have a school organization to rent the space. Hmm. So I don't even think they rent the space out.
For like weddings or whatever. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And that might be wrong, but my understanding is at least that's how you could use the space on a budget.
And it's a really, the stage itself is very unique. I don't know how to adequately describe it for you know, listeners, but there's the normal stage and the pit, but then there's also what they call the passerelle. So it's an extension of the stage that goes out around the pit that we can use during staging. Like, so it's like, it's almost like the pit is like in a hole, but the stage is continuing. Mm-hmm. So at times, you know, if we're having a moment out on the passerelle, the pit is actually behind us and the conductor is down below, kind of right behind us, which has been so much fun to play with, that extra extension of the stage. And, you know, my character is like running across it so much, and there's just so much more action and depth we can bring to the staging with that just added bit to the stage. And I think it's something that can be like lowered or raised in the hall. It's not, doesn't have to always be there, but I'm so excited to get on that stage and get in the space and get to play with it and really.
Yeah. So how long have you guys been in rehearsals?
Forever.
I believe we started January 22nd.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow. It's been a long
fun
process.
Week.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't also mean to bring it up, but like, that's just whenever I hear the January 20s range, I'm always like, ooh. So that's what now? A month and a half? 2 months?
Well, and the rehearsals are in Hyde Park, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you guys both live on the north side?
Yep.
Yep.
Has it been, like, how's the commute been?
But it's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah,
it is a challenge.
It's hard.
And it does not have to be. I work in Hyde Park too. I work on the weekends in Hyde Park, and the Red Line has been broken on that side of the city for a while.
Really?
Right. Well, because it doesn't go. It hasn't. Dude. Maybe it's fixed by now. I have a car now, so not.
I do not even try with public transit going.
I've
down
taken
there.
The Red Line a bunch of times down there. I work down there.
Okay.
On the weekends as well. And I usually take the red line to Garfield and then the 55.
Because you have to take the bus. So where does the Red Line stop now in the south?
Garfield Park.
Because it doesn't go down to 95th, right?
It does.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
That's Garfield?
Garfield's before that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is it easier to get onto the bus from there?
Yeah.
Got you. Yeah, because I remember when I would take transit down to Hyde Park, I'd have to do Jackson to 6th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is really interesting for people that don't live in Chicago, but I actually am really into the like extended transit directions thing.
Well, it's like how California people talk about, like, well, you take the 1 to the
right.
I don't know anything about California highways. I was about to, the 1 to the 4 to the 17.
Yeah.
I love the idea of you having latent California highway knowledge. and that's tricky. Because then you start thinking about budgeting your time. You know, if you live in the north side and getting down there, it takes at least an hour from transit.
It takes like an hour and 15, hour and a half from where I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's just like yet another example of the sacrifice that we do for our art. Because, like, you know, this is your second show with G... Second show?
First.
first. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. With this group, and like, do you like want to work with them again, like in the future?
I definitely want to work with them again. I want to have an easier, more convenient way to get down there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to work with them. But again, but I mean, this is the second time that I've worked with a company that, like, the rehearsals and the performances are so far out of my way, that it is stressful just thinking, like, how am I going to get out there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I just think it's just, like, yet another example of, like, the kind of, like, the struggle that we have to put up with.
Because I'm sure you both also work, right? Like, a day job. And so where is that in comparison to Hyde Park and where you live? And sorry, far also, away. I don't mean to be, like, where do you live? That's not
a yeah. Like, what's all the details of your
what's your address?
How does that all affect your day to day?
I work out west in Harwood Heights and sometimes in Norwood Park.
Okay.
And I don't have a car.
Oh, okay.
And so I have mastered the CTA. But it does mean that I don't make it to weekday rehearsals generally.
Yeah.
Because
There's just no way.
But it would take me 2 hours.
Yeah. So when I about a year and a half ago, was doing a couple things at once, I'd have to go up to Niles by transit working as a cantor, and I still am sometimes, but I would have to get up there at 7. One time I had to get up there at 7, and I had to get up at 4, because from where I was living, it was red to purple, to a bus that didn't start running until 6, but you had to be there. Like, it was a weird, because all the buses at that hour are weird. And I know, like, so much, it's tricky managing all of those cross neighborhood junctures, you know, and you have to kind of, like, do your research and stuff like that.
Like, spend a lot of time on the CTA website, which is not the best.
Yeah. How long have you lived in Chicago?
I actually grew up in Chicago.
Cool.
But I moved back here like the end of July.
Cool.
So I've been here for, I don't know, what is that, 8 months or 7
yeah.
months?
Hustling.
I've been hustling.
Yeah.
That's definitely
the things we do for art.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think there are two kinds of people that make art in Chicago. The kind of person that went to school here and then the kind of person that moved here and then did everything. And I think that's so cool because, like, there's just something to be said about, like, I don't know what it is, but when you move to Chicago, like, there are opportunities for you to do it, so it makes it easier, but, like, there's
no one's going to just hand them to you.
You have to get them, yeah, and I think that...
And you have to meet everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to meet everybody at once. Mm-hmm.
And there's something in it that... There's something in the environment, in the atmosphere that you pick up on that right away. Like... Yeah, I think that's really cool, and I think that's a testament to it, because I've seen you in a bunch of different things, and that's really dope.
Yeah, I'm singing with a whole bunch of small companies out here.
Yeah.
But I certainly did a lot of research the 3 months before I moved out here.
Right.
I was heavy-duty stalking all of the different offer companies.
Yeah. But that's also the thing that's amazing, is that it is possible to do that.
It certainly is.
Yeah, and it's possible to do
it. It's the type of field you have to really want, but... If you want it enough, you can certainly make it happen.
Yeah.
Well, and did you choose Chicago because you're from here and it was familiar, or was there something else that drew you to Chicago?
I mean, I didn't grow up in the city. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the suburbs, but I've always just really loved Chicago. I think it's a beautiful city. And I hadn't lived in a place with seasons for the past 7 years. Mm. And I love winter.
Yeah.
So I really, really missed the seasons in the winter. And I don't know, at the time I had a really crazy extensive Excel spreadsheet comparing a bunch of different major cities and their opera scenes and their public transit and all of that. And the only city that was, you know, kind of on the same plane was New York.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, but I love Chicago. So here I am.
And we draw this comparison a lot, but Chicago is so much more affordable than New York.
Like, that was another reason
as well. There's so much going on, but, you know, like, let's be realistic. Like, when you're working a part-time job and then potentially another part-time job and then also trying to perform. Like, it's not like you can afford $1,000 rent for a studio, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, you know, that is a cool thing about Chicago is that, like, you can, it's kind of a place where you can piece together an income, like a right. modest income, and still be okay,
mm-hmm.
which I think is so important for...
Yeah, I've been seeing reports lately that Chicago's population has been going down, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why that is. Because it definitely doesn't seem like that, I mean, from people I know, and obviously I live in a bubble, but, like, I don't know. Well, it's also really interesting, anytime I see any of 45 talking about Chicago.
Yeah.
Like that, well, the one that was really good was the Clickhole video.
Mm-hmm. Oh, with the Ferris Bueller.
It was like clips of Donald Trump talking about like teenagers are running wild and stuff like that. Maybe. And then just like clips from Ferris Bueller. Oh, we're gonna post it on our Facebook. It's yeah. so good.
We have actual footage of the pandemonium happening yeah. in Chicago right now.
Shout out to Clickhole. I love Clickhole.
Yeah, Clickhole's
I think they're
great.
Brilliant.
Speaking of shout outs, we have two.
Yeah.
So as promised, we shout out people who become subscribers. We have one. I'll do one and you'll do the other. Our first is Evita Tremblay, mm-hmm. who was our guest. She is a subscriber. Thank you, Evita. You know, we super appreciate it. And, yeah, we love you.
Mm-hmm.
And then
the other, thanks for this,
yep.
is my mom. thank you, mother. She, and this is something you and her have met, because Tia and I actually were roommates for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom came and visited, and now you guys are Facebook friends, and I'm sure you see her posting about Roden and Fields all the time.
Oh, yeah. We're Facebook yeah. friends. We're Instagram friends. Mm-hmm. I actually already have a Roden and Fields, like, distributor, so I'm really sorry.
Oh, no, that was not me hawking you. That was me mentioning
I'm sure
it
she's
for
like,
my mom, because I know that she's like, please talk about the Roden and Fields, Daniel. Like, I need people to know about it. Like,
yeah. I use the eye cream and the lash boost, and I love it, so...
Yeah.
She can take that soundbite and run with it.
Yeah. The pricing...
My eyelashes are almost too long at this point.
Yeah, the pricing can be prohibitive, but I've heard that this stuff really works.
It is.
So that, I think, is a very fair...
Summation.
Yeah, yeah, summation. But, yeah, thanks, Debbie. Thanks, Debbie Smith-Johansson.
It takes a village.
Yeah.
yeah, and we're so over the moon. Obviously, the last two, like, my mom donating is not, I'm not like, oh, we've made it now. it is cool that there has been kind of a big rush of support. We've got a bunch of listeners already, and we've mm-hmm. been doing this now for, like, 2.5 weeks. So, yeah, it's really great. Thank you so much, and keep it up, I guess.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, the other thing I actually wanted to talk about, I don't know why I'm bringing this up now, but it kind of because I know my mom is doing a similar thing, but that you were talking about how you're currently in the middle of giving up TV for a while.
I am, yeah.
Yeah, which I think is cool. Like, I think there's something to be said about living in an over-technological world, and I wouldn't ever go full Luddite or anything, but I know there was periods of time where, like, I went without a phone for a few months.
I remember that.
Yeah, and it was kind of weird, but it was also kind of really...
liberating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To, like, be walking around and not be able, like, to be unreachable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's really hard to be unreachable
yeah.
right now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. well, how is that going for you?
Well, it's been a day. Because I decided to do it for Lent. I'm not religious, but... I like a good challenge.
Yeah.
But also just my productivity is not awesome most of the time. And it's because like, and I think I was telling Maureen this, like, I mean, I don't have like cable, but I'll sit down and be like, oh, I'll watch an episode of Buffy or whatever while I'm eating breakfast. And then mm-hmm. like hours later, holy crap, I'm still like watching Netflix, and my day has just been like sucked into it. And it's so easy for me to convince myself, be like, oh, I'm just gonna watch one more episode. Like, no, I need to relax. Like, I'm so busy. And it's like total bullshit. But it just, it takes up so much time. So actually, it was because of your mom that I got this idea. So thanks, lady. Because I saw her Instagram post. And I was like, you know what? That is a great idea. So I decided to just like, I shut my TV off. And now, you know, if I get up in the morning, I'm like, well, what am I going to do with myself? And so I'll listen to, you know, Scoppy Mag podcast.
casual plug.
And a bunch of other podcasts that I've kind of fallen behind on. Mm-hmm. Picking up, I don't know if you guys have heard of these things called books.
Yeah.
But like, they're really fascinating.
I was just going to give a shout out to books.
It's like a TV show in your brain. Don't like watch it happen. Like you, it's fascinating. So
it is detailed enough books? That you can create the picture.
Yeah. Books. How do you spell that? Books?
B-O-O-K-S.
Huh.
Yeah.
Been doing it
wrong. Which is funny that you don't know what a book is, but know how to spell it.
It's just one of these words that I've been seeing everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and just for my art as well, you know, I no longer have something to like mindlessly throw out like hours of my day at, but I'm like, okay, I'm, you know what, I need to work on my character work for Phyllis. I need to put my audition package together. I need to find a monologue. I need to finish, you know, some certification for work. And now it's like, I have no excuses. I have no distractions. It's
And you'll get find it excuses. Done.
Like, oh, of course I will.
Like, I find excuses all the time.
I mean, well,
but it's very freeing.
I think it's interesting, kind of like the visual satisfaction that you get from watching TV. Because I know that something that we did recently that I've recently undone is we've taken all the color off of our phones.
Have you heard about this? You can go into your phone settings and you go to accessibility. On each model of the iPhone, it's different. I think they keep hiding it because they want this to happen. But what happens basically is the colors are designed in a way that spikes your dopamine.
Hmm.
So it makes looking at your phone addictive, like by design.
That makes sense.
But you can go in, you can turn on black and white, and your entire phone just becomes black and white. It's really weird to look at Instagram and stuff like that in black and white, because like I follow a lot of vegan food blogs.
Oh,
and it just looks like piles of mush.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's
the vibrancy of the vegetables is like lost, and you're like, ugh.
But I think it's definitely something to have in the playbook, you know, is like, I've kind of been switching back and forth because it is really interesting about that.
I also deleted Facebook from my phone when I decided to go TV free, because I was like, well, knowing me, I'm just going to be like, next distraction, scroll through like the anger and turmoil that is Facebook.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't, that's also not a good use of my time. So I keep Instagram so I can look at all the, you know, poodle accounts that I follow, but
specifically poodle accounts.
Specifically, poodles. That's what I need. But
Instagram Facebook feels less damaging for some reason. Like Facebook is all ads now. It's such a happier place.
Yeah.
Facebook is, and Instagram's going that way because it's also owned by Facebook. But you know, I mean, like every third post on Facebook is an ad of some kind,
Or something political,
right?
Yeah.
Or a crime that's happened, or.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically TV at this point.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know.
Bummer. And on top of that, you delete Facebook app. And I know I did that for a couple months, but I still went onto it on the browser. Because you can just, maybe I shouldn't have told you that.
No. I've done that in the past. And I have to, like, definitely stop myself from doing that. You know, I'll go onto it on my laptop.
Yeah.
But I'll pick up my phone, and that's my first instinct, is to be like, ah, Facebook. Oh, right. It's not there. And then I'm going to be like, okay, Tiara. Put the damn thing down. Do something with your life.
Yeah.
Because you're an embarrassment.
Oh.
So let's talk about self-care.
What a beautiful segue.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You're a horrible monster. Let's talk about loving yourself. Yeah.
No, actually, let's do it. What is the first thing that you think... What is the purest... thing that you do for self-care, if that makes sense. Like, what is the thing? Because there are things where it's like, oh, I'm just going to binge watch this season of Game of Thrones, and that's taking care of myself.
Or I'm going to eat this entire tub of ice cream because I deserve it or something.
But and like, I don't necessarily mean to, like, guilt shame either, because that's not the direction. No. But, you know, like, what's the thing that you're like, okay, I feel, my brain feels tired or whatever, and you go to that thing?
Yoga.
Yeah.
Definitely helps. Because it's just such a great way to get in tune with, like, your body. Not only, you know, mentally calming yourself down, but you're also like, so where am I at with my breathing today? Mm-hmm. Like, how are the old lungs doing?
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, my balance is a little off on this side. Like, you're getting really in tune with yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that's become... Yeah, new agey stuff aside,
it even, like, makes sense that you can... like, monitoring your breathing, like, paying attention to alignment is all extremely important.
And, like, if you're holding a pose and you fall down, then you're like, oh, it's okay. I'll just, you know, keep going. So, like, it forces you to be... It's such an aggressive term, but to be nicer, kinder to yourself, more forgiving. Also, I know I have a tendency when I get... I mean, I'm a huge introvert, and when I get overwhelmed... and overstimulated, of course, it's important for me to take alone time and just kind of have my me time. But then if too much of that will also kind of lead to this depression spiral, and I'll be like, oh, well, there's no one around me. It's clearly it's because I don't have friends. And it's like, no, you made the choice to have some alone time. So lately my like go-to for mental health is reaching out to people that I can talk to. Through the Ilanthi experience, I've already made some incredible friends that we've like really connected, and we can have like honest conversations with each other and help each other out. And you know, my boyfriend is very supportive. He understands when I'm going through a rough time. You know, I just need someone there to like either talk to about what I'm feeling, or also just to, you know, make me laugh. Let's go do something fun and silly and like just enjoy another human's company is really amazing, like pure way of self-care for me.
Well, so I think it's an interesting thing that you brought that up, because I think a theme throughout Chicago performing is there are so many, it's not like, you know, I'm trying to think of a good example of this. Other areas of performing, and I'm sure there are other cities where it's like this, but because there's so much of a community of performers and everyone kind of knows each other, there's a sustainability in that. So it's not like the relationships that you build in a show with the other performers, like friendships and stuff like that. They don't end after the show necessarily.
Yeah.
Because it's all kind of people that are going through similar things. I think that's also why it's so easy to live here and make art.
Yeah, the community here is just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, incredibly kind and supportive. And who was I talking to the other day? The past couple shows that I've done, I've actually interacted with a lot of people who don't come from an opera background.
Cool.
That they're more musical theater, or they're more just straight theater actors. And... so talking to them about like basically the difference between our worlds, as similar as they are, they're also vastly different, has been amazing. It's been awesome to have the opportunity to like support them in their endeavors that are so different from mine after the show is over. But someone mentioned, they're like, yeah, I mean, you think of like opera scenes and like all the opera singers that I've met before, like you just assume they're kind of aloof and not very kind, and it's really cutthroat and competitive. And that's not what I've experienced here. That, you know, it's such a loving community and supportive community, and we're all fighting the same fight and like experiencing the same struggles.
The hustle is very real.
It's very real, and it's exhausting, and it would be so easy to just be like jealous of everybody, but we need each other.
Yeah.
We need that camaraderie and, that understanding and help.
So, Marissa, I'm wondering, as someone who is a relative newcomer to Chicago as of last July, you know, what have you found to be like, what have you found about the Chicago musical community? I mean, did you come directly here from San Francisco?
I did.
So, like, what was that transition like?
I mean, I definitely have to echo what Tierra said, that everyone here is, there's really no cutthroat atmosphere. It's definitely a musical and arts community, which I enjoyed a lot. The first month and a half I was back here, I was working with Floating Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm pretty close with everybody else who was working with them in that month and a half, just as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, I mean, not to put down San Francisco at all, but it took me probably 3 or 4 months to feel like I belonged when I moved there. And that really was not the case for me here. It took about like 3 or 4 minutes. Just everybody was, you know, really invested in what they could do to help out the person next to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in this type of field where it is such a hustle all the time, it really does take a village.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I mean, I think that's, I found that to be the case as well. Like, the key to my success in Chicago has been the people I've met. I was just lucky that, you know, my church job landed, the church job I landed in got me my first couple gigs, pretty much. Like, I met Alfredo Jimenez, who hooked me up with Main Street Opera.
Mm-hmm.
I met you, and we've done a bunch of different, you being Daniel, I'm pointing, which is podcast gold.
Yep.
But
that
goes
right in the like
air quotes
column.
Yeah. Yeah. Air quotes pointing super, translates well to audio. No, but I met Daniel, and we've done a bunch of projects together. It's entirely the people you know, which I mm-hmm. think is a little different from, I mean, I think that that's a common theme in all artistic communities, that it's mm-hmm. it's about who you know, but it's less conniving in Chicago.
Yeah, it's
like,
less
you don't have to like angle yourself to meet the right people. You can mm-hmm. just meet people.
Right.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I initially decided that I wanted to join Opera on Tap, actually.
Cool.
Because I figured not only would it be kind of a stress-free environment to just, you know, get out and do what I do, but I figured, what a great way to meet every singer in the Chicago opera scene. Let's do that. That would be great.
Well, it cuts to the chase.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cuts to the quick.
And when you're moving to a new place, if you want to eat and have a place to live, you don't really have time to, like, slowly meet everybody. You mm-hmm. kind of have to just, like, just do it.
Yeah. And it's easy, too, because a lot of people that are performers or are creative types, they are introverted. Yeah. You know, they are, mm-hmm. they do need time to themselves. And getting it all out of the way in one go is very appealing. And I think that's almost kind of the thing with Opera on Tap, too, where, you know, the thing that I think the singers really get out of it is performing and doing it in front of an audience and just being like, okay, I have this aria I want to do. I've always wanted to learn this aria. But I've never had a place to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And having a space to do that is, like, really, really helpful.
Have you guys talked about CVAC at all on the podcast yet?
I want to have Matt on before. So, Matt, CVAC stands for Chicago Vocal Arts Consortium.
Yes.
It is a, Tierra and I and Matt all lived together for a year. And so we kind of really know a lot about each other's projects, which is really cool. And we want to have Matt on before his next event of any kind, because I want to talk up to him about it a lot. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that'll be... Okay, sorry everybody. So the audio equipment revolted.
Mm-hmm.
The program was like... Grr, 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 just like that.
Just like a car trying to start in winter.
Yeah, so you're getting me in mid-sentence. I think I was talking about how... I was going to mention... that, and I mentioned this while we were taking a break, that I was going to mention that we're starting a D&D campaign with Matt Peckham, but I'm going to let Maureen ask a question instead of talking about that.
Yeah. So during the break, you mentioned that this is your first time performing Gilbert and Sullivan. Marissa.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, how has your experience been?
You.
Yes.
Yes. Actually, it's both of our first time doing
it. Is.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, Marissa first, because, and then I want to hear your experience with it. So, how's it going?
It's a really cool experience. This Gilbert and Sullivan show, from the other ones that I have seen, is very different from the typical Gilbert and Sullivan. From what I've seen, a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan shows tend to not be very politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like using yellow face and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I think this show focuses on themes that are so relevant to society, not just today, but I feel like those themes aren't going to go away. You know, they're going to be sort of timeless. So I was pretty excited to work on an atypical Gilbert and Sullivan show. I am terrible with British accents, so that has been quite a project for me.
Your British accent is great.
That took so many hours. Yeah, the first day that our director, that I met our actual director, Shane, I just like wrecked all of my lines, and I was so terrified that I couldn't even put my book down because... So when I first memorized my dialogue, I didn't realize that subconsciously in my head, I was thinking them in the way that I would speak them.
Oh.
And then when I tried to speak them in the British accent, I forgot everything. It was like my brain was treating it like a different language.
Interesting.
And so I had to go back and re-memorize all of my dialogue. I have lovely recordings on my phone of me in British accents reading everyone else's lines with the appropriate pauses for me to speak. So I'm sure everyone on the bus has thought I'm nuts, you know?
Like a language
tape? They've seen weirder.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is so funny.
But,
so
I mean, funny. That's been, like, one of the most difficult things for me is just the accent. Like, the other day, Aaron asked me, like, what's the rest of that line? But he asked me, what's the rest of that line in his regular accent? And I, like, my brain was like, And he was like, what's the rest of that line? And I was like, okay, oh, I can do this. I can do this.
There's nothing in the show in that accent.
Yeah. But I think the other big thing for me that's been a large change from what I'm used to is that as a mezzo, I'm generally cast as a boy.
Mm.
And, I mean, I'm used to being, you know, Carabino or Prince Charming or the Emperor of Rome or whoever, but it's pretty atypical for me to be playing a female.
Well, and is Iolanthe, is she like, is she older or is she like...
She is a fairy, so she is a couple of centuries old.
Oh.
But she looks like she's about 17.
Mm-hmm. That's so... Okay, so... There's kind
Which
of a...
Which is what causes a lot of the trouble in the show.
In the show, good. Yes.
Perfect. Because there's kind of a stereotype among... Growing up, I've actually exclusively studied with mezzos, and so, like, I know...
Okay.
I know a lot about, like, mezzo stereotypes and, like, the mezzo struggle, but there's a stereotype of, like, you're either an old lady, a boy, or Carmen.
Witches, bitches, and bitches.
And yep. So, like... So, like, to play... Kind of just like this ethereal...
It's very different.
Yeah?
Is actually, I met with Aaron for 2 hours the other day, and a lot of the work that we did was to get rid of all of my boy mannerisms. Because, I mean, given, you know, the whole, like, gender is a whole spectrum, I am not a very feminine girl. And I have always identified more as, like, the tomboy sort of girl.
Yeah.
And so playing a boy as a mezzo has been really... The mannerisms are very easy for me. It feels natural. I sit like a dude, apparently, all the time in my life, and I gesture like a man, and my voice is low, and, you know. But none of those things are Iolanthe. She's certainly not a girly girl, but she's very graceful. And poised, and, you know, Carabino is exactly not that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm very used to playing exactly the opposite of this character, so I spent 2 hours with him undoing all of my boy mannerisms.
Aaron is really, really good at stuff like that.
He really is.
Like physicality on stage.
I didn't even realize I was doing half of those things.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, your hips aren't moving when you walk. And I was like,
he has a wonderful eye.
Huh.
For movement.
Yeah.
So how has your experience in GNS been?
I was such a nerd growing up, that I like was obsessed with old like movie musicals and any like video recording of anything that I could get my hands on. I would like obsess over it. So I remember, I think when I was in high school, I would wake up every morning and I'd put in my little VHS recording of Pirates of Penzance, and I would like fast forward to all my favorite numbers, and I would like watch it and sing along to it while I was like getting ready for school. And I would grow up like watching operettas, but I never really got to participate in one. So like that was the extent of my GNS knowledge, was like seeing the Mikado performed, seeing Pirates of Penzance, like the big ones. But other than that, I didn't know much about it. And this has been so much fun. Like you said, to kind of do, I mean, Iolanthe is very well known, like I think outside of this country. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's so different than I think the typical GNS production. I think my struggle with it has also been kind of character-wise, that, like you said, so much of GNS is kind of affected. And especially being, I guess you could call Phyllis like the ingenue. Mm-hmm. It'd be so easy to kind of make her fluffy and unintelligent and not very interesting. And I was like, I don't want to do that. So I like tried to make her as real as possible. And then Shane came and saw what I had done and was like, what is this? Cause he's a traditionalist to the core when it comes to Gilbert and Sullivan. And I was like, oh, I don't want her to be fluffy. So it's been a really amazing experience to work with Aaron, and work with Matt and try to figure out who this girl is, to make her kind of traditional Gilbert and Sullivan, but also make her,
have agency.
Yeah. make her real. Cause out of all of the silliness that happens on stage during Iolanthe, she's kind of this like one real person at the center of it all.
Yeah.
Just being like, what are all of you doing?
Yeah.
So I wanted to keep a hold of that, but also, you know, she is graceful, balletic. She still is kind of silly. She's desperately in love with this young shepherd, and she's in a silly situation being chased around by fairies. And so it's been fun to try to like marry the two, the traditional with the real, with my acting and my singing.
Cool. Well, it's that time again. We're pretty close to, we have a few minutes left. So the last thing we always do with our guests is, we'd love if you guys would do a plug, and we'll give you each a minute, actually. And, if you have less to say than a minute, we always have people, offer up to people to talk about, like, their favorite thing right now, like,
an organization that they feel is doing really good work, who just, like, deserves a shout-out or a plug.
Yeah. So you guys can draw straws.
We don't have any straws. Draw a minute.
You can go first if you'd like.
Okay.
Nailed it.
okay, well, I guess just really quick, like you said, Iolanthe is being performed by the Gilbert and Sullivan Opera Company of Chicago, and I believe their website is just gilbertandsullivanoperacompany.org, and that will be March 10th, 11th, and 12th. And tickets are available online now, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a really amazing production. So that's, of course, a big shout out. Actually, there's a really amazing, speaking of like, well, I've been listening to your guys' podcast all morning, and you guys have been gushing over Emma Cox, as she rightfully deserves. But she's, you know, organizing her kind of protest cabaret. There is a member of Iolanthe, Lee Wichman, who is a local actor, and he just founded an organization called Chicago Actors Call to Action. And last month I went to their fundraising benefit. For every month they throw a benefit concert that raises money for a particular organization that may need help under the current administration. Mm-hmm. Last month it was for the Southside chapter of the NAACP. And it was a just absolutely incredible night, amazing performance at the Promontory. And they have another one coming up this month for the ACLU, which is going to be at a Tapas restaurant in Halstead, and I don't remember the actual place. But definitely look up Chicago Actors Call to Action and donate, offer to perform, you know, be just an audience member to support. Support all these amazing performers. You know, Emma's fundraiser, Lee's fundraiser, and just kind of show up. That's all we need, is people to show up and stand up.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I would echo saying, as I've said before, it takes a village, and it's so important to all of us to bring this art to people, and so we, of course, have to have people to bring it to.
Butts and seats.
Exactly. Butts and seats. But I think we're all just really excited to share this really exciting story with everyone. It has its cheeky humor moments, but also has its moments that kind of just rip your heart out. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes such incredible artistry on the part of everyone in the cast to be able to switch back and forth from cheeky humor to rip your heart out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just not something to be missed.
Cool. Awesome.
Do you guys have places that people can find you? Sorry. Like,
like websites?
Yes. Yeah, like Instagram.
Like your homes. Yeah. I told you I wouldn't give you my address.
Yeah. My website is www.marissasimmons.com.
Cool.
Simmons, nice. Spelled like Richard.
Nice. How do you spell Marissa?
MarissaSimmons.com. Yes.
Cool. I don't have a website at the moment. It's in the works. I need some photography help.
Ooh, from, let me know.
You know, I need some recommendations if you know someone with a camera.
I do.
Well,
you have a Facebook fan page, right?
I do have a Facebook page. Just Tiara Burge Soprano.
Great.
Yeah, my name is spelled weird. I'm sure it'll be on the podcast itself. So. Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck then. The one
Nobody loves us.
No.
It'll be Marissa Simmons and then just and like guessed. Seven spaces.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. Thank you all for listening. Again, my name is Daniel Johansson. Go ahead. You can say your name. You were like gearing up for it.
I was gearing up for my spiel. And I'm Maureen Smith.
And you can find us on scappymag.com. You can see all our articles, old and new, there. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter under @scappymag. You can find us on Facebook under Scappy Magazine. You can find us on iTunes, Scappy Mag, all one word, SCAPIMAG.
As always, I want to emphasize the importance of donations. You heard how awesome our shout outs were today.
Mm-hmm. They were good ones.
We said we loved Evita. Mm-hmm. Don't you want to hear us say that we love you?
That's
you
the can, dream.
That's yeah. all I've ever wanted.
Tiara, I love you.
Thank you.
Yeah. You can head to scappymag.com, go to our About section. You can be a subscriber, or you can do a one-time donation. If you become a subscriber, we'll give you a shout-out on the show. If you do a one-time donation, we will send you a handwritten thank you note.
Will Oscar and Moody also, like, sign this? Can you put their little paw prints on the notes? Because I think that's a good
thing. That's devastatingly cute. The only downside I would see to that is cleaning that then paws. There would be paw prints all over our apartment.
So here's the deal I'll make. If you donate and you mention, because I think you have to write a little dear email, or you can. Like, you can leave a note.
Yeah.
You'll have to mention them by name.
You'll have to be like, also, I want Oscar and Moody love. Mm-hmm. And then we will...
Well, no, I don't even think that you don't talk through us about it. Talk to the cats. let the cats know.
Leave the cats
because
to know.
Because them putting their paw on is them talking to you.
Yeah. Yep.
So give a
like... Dear Oscar and Moody.
How were your snuggles today? Did you get enough pets?
Moody, how's your belly? Is it great? Yeah. Go to our website. Give a little, give a lot. If you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Thank you so much for listening, and go out and make something.
Yep.